coming up on Thunder Pop.
Man, here we go again. Episode number 35 of the Thunder Pop podcast. Stephen Presley. And
g'day, cunts!
Yes, the one and only Mr. Reed Charles.
What up, bitches?
Co-hosting today. I sat here knowing that was coming. All right, we're here in the Thunderpop Dome. Episode number 35. This is the second of what has been a two-parter.
Yeah,
two-parter. The sequel, and it is...
Not a prequel.
Not a prequel. It is each of us bringing in our favorite Star Trek fan films. Reed Charles, last episode, brought us Star Trek Prelude to Axanar by producer Alec Peters, directed by Mr. Christian Gossett, also written by Alec Peters and Mr. Christian Gossett. And we had Mr. Christian Gossett on the show, and it was a great interview, full book of information. In this episode, now it's my turn to bring the show and tell to class. Yay! Something from the Star Trek fan film genre. So I bring you something called Starship Exeter.
Stardate 5013.1, Captain's Log. Responding to a distress call, we have found Starbase 16 on planet Korns 4, completely destroyed.
Captain Costant, the Trossarians will pay.
Oh my god!
Now, Starship Exeter, fan film project from Star Trek. Two people that are very close to us that worked on that film.
Yeah,
one being...
Me.
Mr. Good Day Cunts himself.
Yeah, I was... The dead guy in the red shirt in the hallway.
Yeah. Reed Charles, about how far in do we see you?
Exactly 43, 44 is what you'll see me. That's when the actress comes in and starts manhandling me and grabs my phaser.
Grabs your phaser.
Oh, yeah.
That's what she said. Mr. Dan Murphy, the guy you hear at the end of our show, the one that's yelling, hit the bricks.
Shut up! See you later! Hit the bricks!
The late, great Dan Murphy, also in the film, is one of the security officers by the elevator.
Yeah.
In most of the scenes, he's a security officer. Of course, this film, with all of its ties to us, was filmed right here in Austin, Texas.
The old...
Austin Studios?
Yes, that's the one, yeah.
And then last but not least, we were talking about Axanar. Last show, we had Christian Gossett on. We'll now have Alec Peters on this episode from... Star Trek Axanar. And with Axanar and Exodar and...
I'm so confused!
Okay, I lied.
Thunder Pop!
He is.
Yeah, he is.
I did a short one this time.
Did a short one.
Short one. It is the 35th episode of the Thunder Pop podcast, bringing you the fan film of my selection, Starship Exeter. Now, this was created by Jim and Josh Johnson, who I assume are brothers.
Yes.
Johnson & Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then that's what she said.
It's like two jokes already. With
two Johnsons.
Two Johnsons.
It was starring James Coulhane. I assume I'm pronouncing his last name right. Holly Guess, who has the best name in the cast. Holly Guess. That's a cool name. Holly Guess, Michael Buford, and Joshua Caleb were the stars of the film, executive produced by Jim Johnson, original network, World Wide Web, WWW. So this film...
When did that come out? What year is that?
Its original release date was December 19th, 2002.
2002.
God, I don't remember when this was all going on.
Wait a minute. Oh, they filmed this in the summer of 2002?
Yeah.
No, wait. It took them a while to finally get it together.
So they filmed it that summer?
Yeah, it was fucking hot as balls, man.
Well, they filmed it...
At nighttime.
Okay, no, it came out in December 19th, 2002.
It was right after Idiocracy.
So it probably was filmed Did it take a couple of years from the time they filmed it
to get it out? Yeah, but no, as far as the filming was all done there in the summertime at nighttime when they filmed it.
Yeah.
And they were using props from Idiocracy. Had given them a lot of stuff.
Now, how did that work? Did they just ask them, or did the
they knew? Yeah, it was early in the 2000s mm-hmm. that a lot of films were being done here in Austin and mm-hmm. Texas, and they knew somebody from and they said, "Hey, we have some props here for Idiocracy. You want them?" I was like, sure, hell yeah! So they brought them over, mm-hmm. repainted them, and used them yeah.
before our state government shut down the film industry.
Yeah,
Fucking assholes
in Texas, you know. And then it all went. Then it all went to Louisiana because Louisiana yeah. was
and New Mexico.
And New Mexico because those states were doing the tax breaks.
Yep.
But I mean it was really going in Louisiana.
I was in like 10 films as an extra. I was actually
here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was big here. And then but in Louisiana, then it got really big in Louisiana. They were mm-hmm. building sound stages in New Orleans.
That could have happened here, but that didn't happen. They even had remember that film village you're gonna mm-hmm. make out there yeah. somewhere?
I remember.
And that all got shut down.
Kind of close to where you live. They were talking about doing one out there.
Oh my God. It almost
happened.
Dude. It almost happened.
Almost came a thing. Probably would have been right where your house is.
Probably.
You yeah. probably wouldn't have been living there then. You might have been living somewhere else.
Like, goddamn artist.
Yeah. But they then Louisiana got it, but then Louisiana they got dumbass mm-hmm. and they shut it down there too. Dumbass. They took away the tax break.
Damn.
So now it's Georgia. I hear it's all this productions are going on in Georgia now. Adam Sandler's been up there filming his movies.
Walking Dead's done there too.
Yeah, Walking Dead's done in Georgia.
Yeah.
So they're the ones that are getting all the films now because they're doing.
We talked about it, you know, all the films that came out of New Mexico, like Breaking Bad, is like one of them, right?
Yeah.
That would have been done here in Texas, no doubt.
Easily. Yeah, because they offer so much.
Yeah.
In resources, talent.
It could have been done here.
Yeah, they took the. What about
everything that was done in Louisiana and New Mexico, could have been done here.
Walking Dead.
Everything.
Could have been done here.
All of them could have done. Dukes of Hazzard could have been done here.
The Dukes of Hazzard film.
Yeah.
Not the TV series.
No,
the TV series, yeah, that was years ago.
That was Super Trooper guys that did that.
What's funny about the TV series is they shot a lot of that in L.A.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be set in Georgia, but they built a set. That looked like I've been to the set. It was at the Warner Brothers studio tour.
Oh, wow.
And it's Hazzard. Like, they have their own little Hazzard County. But that Hazzard County has also been used in other shows. They just change a few things.
Yeah.
Signs and stuff, but it was that Hazzard County's been in a lot of shows other towns. I think they even used it like in the one of the Superman TV shows.
Damn,
Hazzard County, like as where is Clark Kent's like hometown?
Oh, okay.
You know, if you were
Smallville,
actually, okay. Here's a breakdown called Midwest Street on the Warner Brothers lot was used in The Dukes of Hazzard, Growing Pains. That's the one, Growing Pains. Gilmore Girls.
Oh, okay.
You know, so there you go. What's funny about that connection, though, is John Snyder, of course, plays his dad in Smallville, who was from the Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah, Smallville and all that was filmed in Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
in the BC. So that's all, you know, a lot of the sci-fi stuff, like, you know, Stargate, all the Stargates were filmed in Vancouver.
Did you ever watch Smallville? Were you a Smallville watcher?
Not really, no. They didn't like the whole superhero.
It was a little bit like a rom-com kind of superhero, like a lot of those WB shows.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Where they rom-com, kind of like The Flash is now.
Yeah, exactly.
Where it's done a little bit for like a young teen audience with a rom-com
vibe. Yeah, stuff makes me sick to my stomach.
Vibe to it. But, so that one was done. But I caught a few of those, the Smallvilles. I caught a few.
Not too bad.
That was pretty good. I mean, the writing sometimes was pretty really good.
They had a good hockey team, the crew.
Did they?
Yeah.
How do you know that?
Watching the behind the scenes of Stargate, they talk about their hockey team.
You mean a Smallville?
Smallville team.
The Smallville team?
Crew team against the Vancouver, against the Stargate crew.
Oh, they played hockey. They played the Stargate crew.
Yeah.
And they would always kick their ass?
Yeah, yeah.
That's funny.
They talk about that, how the crew fight each other.
Were there a lot of Canadians on the Smallville team? They must be, because Canadians are really
good. All this was done in Vancouver. So yeah,
Canadians are really good in hockey.
Yeah.
Okay, so it was kind of Canadians against Canadians then.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. The John Snyder, he played the dad of Clark Kent's dad mm-hmm. in Smallville, and they did an episode. Smallville fans know this. They did an episode where Tom Wopat, who played was a co-star with John Snyder in The Dukes of Hazzard, he comes on as an old friend of Mr. Kent, Clark Kent's dad, and they go joyriding in a car that's similar to the General Lee, but it was all painted blue.
Actually, one of those guys has a General Lee.
Well, John Snyder.
He has one. Yeah.
Now, he used to have several because the John Snyder. So I'm a big Dukes of Hazzard fan, so I know my Dukes of Hazzard. I'm like Dukes of Hazzard, like you are with The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So John Snyder used to own a ranch near San Antonio. Wow. Back in the late 90s. probably around the time he was doing Smallville. And he had a business for a while where you could order a General Lee from him. And he actually did the construction. Like he built the engines, and then he would
paint, that was here.
He would paint them at his ranch. But if you wanted a custom, like if you wanted it in a different color, mm-hmm. so if you wanted a black Sith version of the General Lee that had like the Sith symbol on the top, mm-hmm. he'd customize it how you want, but it was basically the same car, just with your own design, whatever design you want, and then you could order it from him through his website for a price, of course. But so he would do it, he'd build those in his barn, his ranch, but then more recently, he's not in San Antonio anymore, he actually lives in Louisiana now.
Oh.
And he bought some land, a bunch of land, like cheap land in Louisiana, like near the swamps. So it's real cheap. Nobody wants it. And he built his farm on near that place. And he built a small film studio, like a warehouse, like a soundstage studio. And he rents it out at reasonable rates to indie filmmakers. He tries to give them a break to rent the.
Damn.
What sucks is he got the last really bad flood they had in Louisiana. Yeah. He got flooded out.
Oh man!
So they have to rebuild, mm-hmm. and I think now because we were just in New Orleans, and I was reading about them while I was there. I think they're getting it all put back together. You know, insurance, the insurance money comes in.
Good for him.
But he was doing. I was like, that's cool, man. I'd like to go take a tour of that. If you ever need a bigger stage, soundstage,
it's beside my garage.
Beside your garage,
that's what I'm using for production. My stage. Yeah.
I mean, you'd have to go to Louisiana to get access to, but he'd probably give you a good deal. John Snyder.
Man, so I didn't realize that information about New Orleans. I mean, you know, New Louisiana kind of doing away with the incentives, and now they're going to Georgia. That makes sense now.
That's what I'm reading. People were up in arms when we were there in Louisiana about that, like just a few weeks ago. And there's still a lot of production going on there. Mm-hmm. We saw Joel McHale filming a movie called Assassination Nation. Mm-hmm. Joel McHale, of course, is from the TV show Community, and then he's a comedian, but he's also was the talk soup guy that did the talk soup. Up until just recently, I think he's leaving it soon. He's been doing it for like 20 years, like ridiculous. And that's where he just makes fun of like bits, clips from like talk shows.
Yeah.
Like they'll show some Jerry Springer clip and then he makes fun of it. And that's pretty much the whole show. He's in front of a green screen. It's the simplest thing ever, but it's like also the most genius thing ever. Like they've made like that many years of a TV show just for
doing making fun of people.
Just making fun of people in front of a green screen. So
we could do that.
I mean, we could do that.
We can make fun of our friends.
We should do that. That's the show. Because I was like, well, what hasn't been
riffed? I fucking hate you, Reed.
What hasn't been riffed yet? And it's like they did a show where they riff on movies. Some guys on cable did a show where they riff on music videos. So Joel McHale does a show where he riffs on talk shows. We can riff on our friends' Facebook pages. We show them a green screen behind us, and we make fun of social.
We make fun of them.
We make fun of social network pages. That's our YouTube show. We're gonna have people pissed off at us though. We're doing this shit because we'll start with people we know really well, and then they're gonna
1,000 people. And then that we're down to like 20.
Then they're gonna hate our guts.
They're gonna hate our guts. They're gonna
then
block
we have
us.
To move on to people we don't know, and then we're gonna have people really pissed off that don't know us. Like,
well, it's like Lane Book. You'd be like Lane Book. They're located here in Austin too.
Lane Book is like kind of that kind of idea.
Yeah, Lane Book does it, but they have a website that makes fun of it.
Yeah, see, somebody's already had that idea.
We could do it in video form though.
Video form of that. Maybe we could get them to sponsor us to be our like we could call it Lane Book the show.
Well, Facebook tried to sue them, but they ended up winning.
They won.
They won. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of because it's under the category of parody?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's why
Yeah. Unlike Alec Peter tried to do one where it was based on fair use, and then like, nope.
For Star Trek, his Star Trek fan film.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have Alec Peters coming up not too far off, because we just had Christian Gossett on the last show. So stay tuned for Alec Peters from Star Trek, Axanar. We talked about Prelude to Axanar. Alec Peters, of course, producer of...
The one who started the spark.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about that because that's very important. And we talked about that some. We're going to talk about that some more. Mm-hmm. So Starship Exeter, filmed here in Austin, Texas. It was a fan film project, one of the earliest of the semi-professional fan film projects.
Yes.
It became increasingly a common fixture of the internet video scene to do Star Trek fan films. Now, Starship Exeter is set with the continuity of the original Star Trek TV series. Of course, you knew that. And features the new crew of a sister ship to the famous USS Enterprise. Anyway, the USS Exeter...
Even their logo is different, too.
Yeah, they use a different logo. They don't use the theme song from the original show. They have their own theme song. Yeah. Well, the film and the original characters are the brainchild of the Johnson & Johnson that we mentioned, who act as producers and starred in the film. So this is the thing with this film. They really have the high honor of being one of the kind of the ones that really...
That kicked it off, yeah.
Kicked it off.
They were the first ones.
Because if you think about it, in 2002, YouTube was just still in its infancy.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of really still getting off the ground. Mm-hmm. And that's the video platform that's allowed many of these films to find an audience so quickly in such a short span of time. So it started off in some ways, it took it to the next level in making a semi-professional fan film. And we know, you know, Dan worked on this film. Mm-hmm. You're on this film. Mm-hmm. I know Phil Bush, who played one of the other security officers. I haven't talked to him in a long time, but I recognized him. I was like, that nerd, that guy. But then I saw a guy that I recognized. His name is Gary Peters, playing the other captain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I talked to him one time in San Antonio.
Star Trek rumors for that ass.
So when I saw him, he didn't seem very happy playing the captain or the other shit that blew up, whatever. And I just like, okay, walked away from that because we didn't want to go. He just seemed very unsatisfied with his experience with Exeter.
Oh, with Exeter.
That's what the impression I got from him.
Well,
I never went into detail, though. Never remember asking for more details.
We got to talk a little bit about it in terms of the negatives. And I'm going to talk about the positives because there are more positives to me than there are negatives about this film.
That's the way you're supposed to talk about something.
A couple of points I want to make about this Starship Exeter. There's two of these. They made first The Savage Empire in 2002. They followed that up with a more ambitious project, and that was the Tresarian Intersection. So those were the episodes they made of Starship Exeter. So here's some really interesting side facts about Exeter. Exeter is set within the continuity of the original Star Trek TV series. It's supposed to be the sister ship to the famous USS Enterprise. Now, the Tresarian Intersection, which was the second of the two, was written by Dennis Russell Bailey, who wrote an episode called The Tin Man for Star Trek The Next Generation. There was supposed to be a third episode, The Atlantis Invaders. It was in pre-production at the same time the second episode was being filmed, but ultimately was abandoned. So in addition to the two full-length episodes, there's a humorous vignette titled The Night Shift, which was written by, again, Dennis Russell Bailey. It was shot as a trial run for camera test at the start of the principal photography for the Tresarian Intersection, and it was also released on the internet back in 2005. Yeah. Now, I'll tell you, you dial this movie up on YouTube, and there are many good comments about it.
Oh, shit. Okay.
And I would say, I'm not mad at them, but nobody responded back with my request for an interview. I tried really hard to get somebody like from the production, and it was like, I even added myself to the group. Mm-hmm. There was like, you know, 15 people in this group. I added myself. I corresponded. I sent an email to one of these producers. I'm not going to name any names, which Johnson it was. But I sent a message, that I was really into the movie and that I would love to interview somebody. And I didn't care who it was. I mean, I'd get the guy that came in and cleaned after that were done with the production at the end of the day. But I wanted someone from the production to come in. Yeah. I mean, you're here, so that's a
star. That's your closest connection. That's to close, it
the dead
is me.
Guy, the dead guy on the floor.
I can tell you how that felt.
Yeah, but we'll talk about that. But nobody responded. I'm like, I'm fine with that. If you don't want to come on the show, no. I mean, we've already had that happen. Bubblegum King. I'm not going to name any names. Bubblegum King. But
turn you down for an interview?
Well, they turned me. They first turned me on for an interview.
What?
And then they turned me down. Remember, he turned me on and then he turned me down.
Teasing.
Yeah, he's a tease. But.
It's now like, you're making me horn.
Hey, but now it's a challenge, you know, when they really want to play the cat and mouse game, it makes you want to chase even more. So I'm coming to chew on that that bubble gum. We're not done yet, sir. But if he didn't want to come on before, he probably doesn't want to come on after I made that joke.
But it sounds like this crew of this Exeter, it sounds like they went underground for some reason.
It's like they've gone underground. I don't know what.
Well, okay, they had a...
It's like they're on a CIA witness protection program.
That's what it seems like, because I'm out of the blue, I started looking it up, and I found it. I looked at the video, I was like, oh, they after so many years, they finally put the video up, right, on YouTube.
Yeah.
It was all put together, and I was like, damn, this is good. And then I saw somebody comment, hey, They're going to premiere it at the... They're going to have it at Alamo Draft House on South Lamar.
Premiere. And this was like only a few years ago, you're saying?
Yeah, because they just remodeled that place, right?
So what, after all those years?
Yeah.
This came out in 2002, and they were going to have a premiere almost a decade later?
Yes, I know, exactly.
How long had it been on YouTube?
For a couple of years, maybe.
So it hasn't been on YouTube for that many years.
You could see when it was actually posted. You could see that. But as far as... It took them... God, man. It took them... They have a documentary about it, too. But I haven't seen the documentary yet. I've been wanting to see
about Exeter.
Yeah. How they actually made the whole thing.
Was that made later?
Yeah, later. Okay. It was actually done during the filming of it, pretty much. And it took them a few years to finally get the episode together. And they have a documentary.
Well, and that I understand. I mean, it's an ambitious project.
It takes a long time, yeah.
For, you know, people to put something together.
Oh, it takes a while.
It takes a while.
So when they premiered it at the Draft House in Lamar down there, when it just remodeled that place... I had just heard about it, and I was like, what? It was like 2 weeks. It was almost like the gods were coming down and said, hey, go check it out. Mm-hmm. And that's when I saw it. And I saw it there, and I saw that a lot of people were there. It was a good
turnout. Was Dan still alive at this point, or was this after his passing?
Yes, Dan was still around, but he didn't go either. He didn't go to that either. I told him about it, but he just maybe he was doing bad at the time, too. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, he was going off and on with his health at that point. So.
Yeah, check the video out, and you can see when it was posted.
It was 2 years ago.
So 2 years ago, they posted it. It was probably a year before that they finally got together. Does it have a date? It should have a date when they actually put it up. Good pan down?
May 1st, 2014.
There you go.
Not that long ago.
No.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
How many views does it have?
It's had over 400,000.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm telling you, when I saw their previous episodes they did, right, like I think of one or two of them, I was really impressed by them. I was like, guys, these guys are really good. Because I had seen the other Star Trek fan films, and they were just terrible. Mm-hmm. It looked bad. The acting was bad. Mm-hmm. God, just visually, everything was just awful. But these guys, there's some there when they were pretty good. One shots were pretty good. But this guy's, I was like, fuck, these guys are really good.
It was a good script.
Yes.
It was visually stunning. It looks right at par with the 60s.
Yes, that's exactly.
Original Star Trek series.
That's exactly what I experienced, too.
Now, in fact... I think in some areas they exceeded.
Yes,
visually.
They were better than the original series. That's exactly what I said, too. Yeah.
They exceeded the original series.
The guys are working on the set.
Mm-hmm.
They're building the Exeter Bridge.
Yes, this is a big story.
Breaking news up in this place.
They said that some of those guys actually worked on the Enterprise.
Original guys.
That's what I
worked
heard.
On the original Star Trek series. Yes. They hired them. This is what you'd heard. This is our...
Rumor.
This is
because
inside
they're in,
baseball.
Yeah, because they're in hiding, so we can't find them.
Is it a Star Trek rumor?
I think it was a set rumor, because when I was there, I heard that, and I was like, that's present.
Is it a Star Trek rumor?
Star Trek rumors for that ass.
So
Star Trek rumors for that ass.
So that is cool, because I want to believe that's true. I'm going to go ahead and say it was true, because that's the coolest story ever. Yeah. So they had the guys.
They were saying it was better built, too.
And they just, because those guys, you think about a job you've done in your past that you only got to do maybe like years ago once, but then you look back on it and you're like, if I could do that again, I would know what I would do different and make it even better.
Yeah.
And that's what these guys got a chance to do. These guys came back, they got to duplicate the
work. They
do it better.
They did it better. And I actually got a chance to go to Johnson's house.
Which Johnson?
The captain.
Okay.
And I got to go to his house, and actually in the garage, they had parts of the bridge, and they were building them, and I helped.
They were building in his house?
Yeah.
Wow.
And he brought pizza and everything, and there was one time when I was in the garage doing some work for him, and the guy who delivered the pizza saw it, and he goes, what the hell is this?
Oh, yeah.
I go, hey, you didn't see nothing. You didn't see shit. And he goes, okay. And he just walked away. He delivered the pizza.
Were you just goofing with him?
I was just goofing with him, but because he was freaking out, because he probably recognized it as like Star Trek something.
Star Trek set.
Yeah, and been like,
he
was freaking out.
But back then, people didn't know what the shit.
They didn't know about this. And so
now if you're doing that and someone sees it, like, oh, you guys are making a Star Trek fan film.
Yeah, they'll know.
But back then, you're like, nobody had ever seen anything like that at that point in time.
And see, that's when I heard that the producers have put down $20,000 of their own money to make this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I heard about that. I was like, damn, it's a lot of money. Yeah. But it was well done.
$20,000. Mm-hmm. But this was before Kickstarter, right?
Oh, yeah.
This is before
it was his own money.
Indiegogo. Yes. So the only way you could make this happen...
was his own money.
Is your own
money. Your own money.
You said it was Dell money, right?
I think he worked for Dell,
The guy worked for Dell. Maybe it was a... Was he a Dellionaire?
Maybe not. I don't think so.
See, there used to be a term that used it a lot in Austin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dell... was a, had a big boom in the 90s, yeah. right? And the people who worked there, they would, after they left, they bought their stock out, right? Mm-hmm. Or they had stock for employees.
Mm-hmm.
Something like stock share. Do you know the story on this, how this worked?
No.
But anyway, there's a term where they got like a severance, and they called them dellionaires.
They cash them out.
And so some of these guys made fortunes. I know people that opened a restaurant like chain.
He was one of those guys.
So he might have had a little dellionaire. Did he have a nice house?
It was a normal house. It wasn't fancy.
So I have to grill you for this info because they won't respond to my email because they're all on witness.
But that was one day I work with them, helped them out. Then I went to go audition for them mm-hmm. at some other guy's house near mm-hmm. Congress. And some guy had the casting agent.
Yeah.
And then they had a piece of the bridge there in the backyard.
I want a piece of that bridge.
I know.
So, but anyway, they're all in a witness protection program now. Yeah, so I can't find him. Can't get a hold of him. I mean, the James is not even – I can't even find him on Facebook.
Cool, but it was kind of sad, too, that when you had to appear at the Animal Draft House on Lamar.
Well, how did that go?
It went very well.
There were a lot of people there, right?
A lot of people were there. I don't think it was sold out, but I think definitely there was at least like 200, 300 people there. Maybe, you know, a full crowd, you know, pretty much.
It'd been cool to see that on the big screen.
Oh, it was, yeah. But it sucked because at one point the film screwed up or something. Yeah, I forget, was the audio went bad.
Oh.
Yeah, so it kind of killed it. Like, oh, what happened? And they had to go back and watch it again.
But they did go back and watch it.
Yeah, but it was actually pretty impressive. Again, the only critique I had was that the acting was terrible, but it's still good. It's still a good story.
Energize.
This is suicidal. For what? We have no other bases in this sector.
Damage control. Deck 7 and 8.
External sensors are down. We're flying by.
We've been trying to work on this all day. We mentioned how we couldn't get anybody from Exeter. But last episode, we did Axanar. Prelude to Axanar as your choice for favorite Star Trek fan film. We had been working on trying to get first Alec Peters, and then when we heard from Christian Gossett, we were like, absolutely, we'd love to interview Christian Gossett. So we had Christian Gossett on, the director. Then I started getting messages after we recorded the episode from Alec Peters. And so, ladies and gentlemen, kind of a surprise guest for everybody, Mr. Alec Peters from Prelude to Axanar.
Captain Garrett.
Hello, sir. How are you doing?
Good, man. How are you guys doing?
Great. We love your picture there.
Captain Garrett, that's awesome.
Oh, I don't know. What's my picture?
It's the Captain Garrett from the original series.
From the original series.
Yeah.
Nice. Wow, Captain Garrett.
So where are you guys based?
We're in Austin, Texas.
I was just down there a couple weeks ago.
You were in Victoria.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
So Reedy, you know, he stalks you a little bit on the internet, so he knows where you're at.
I'm a fan. I'm a fan.
Not in a creepy way. In a fan way.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, surprise Mr. Alec Peters from Star Trek Prelude to Axanar. We're pleasure to bring you to the Thunderpop Dome.
Ah, well, good to be here.
So you were just in Victoria. You were doing one of the conventions over there?
Yeah, there was a Warhammer tournament down there. I play Warhammer, and there was what's called the Horus Heresy, which is one of the games. And it was my first time playing in one of those tournaments, but good group of guys down there. We had a blast. We flew into Austin and then drove to San Antonio. Because I'd never been to San Antonio, so my girlfriend and I went to Riverwalk there, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
You got some Tex-Mex, I hope.
Yes, we did. And then we went to, and then we drove to Victoria. So, yeah.
Nice. Fun.
What's your army?
I play Raven Guard.
Ah, okay.
30K and Blood Angels. I'm going to build Blood Angels. I play Blood Angels in 40K.
I think I know, but I don't familiar with those. Yeah, mine's Tau. Oh, yeah. That's the reaction. I'm like, yep, that's it.
I hate blind Tau. I know everyone. All the Star Trek fans are like, "What are they talking about?"
Yeah, this is where I'm like, y'all are talking a different language at this point. Yeah. I'm looking for a book somewhere that can translate what's being said.
Well, if you're a gamer, Warhammer is a miniature war game. You build and paint your miniatures and then play on a 4x6 or 4x8 table or bigger, as the case may be. So, yeah, so that's one of my big hobbies.
Nice.
Interesting. Intriguing. Now, speaking of hobbies, Star Trek, now you At some point, a little stalking on my part too, I see that you are followers of other Star Trek fan film groups on Facebook. I think I saw you in the Exeter group, which I'm a member of, Star Trek Exeter, the great Star Trek Exeter made filmed in 2002 that we've been talking about in this episode. So you follow other fan films. At what point did you decide, I want to do this? I want to make a Star Trek movie. I mean, when was the day that you said, I got to do this?
Well, it was basically, I had been talking with James Cawley, this is back in 2010, about it. I remember having one conversation with him where I was just saying, you know, James, this just really isn't my thing. I said, I just can't get into it. And we had another conversation a little while later, and I had just gotten the original costume that Steve Inhout wore as Garth of Izar, the one you see in my little icon there. And so we were talking about that, and James was like, oh, that was such a great character, and we were talking about how they never did anything with it, and wouldn't it be cool to know more about Garth's hero? And he was shooting an episode called Origins, which was Kirk at the Academy. And so he said, you know, hey, we're shooting this episode. Why don't we write Garth into the script? And I was like, yeah, you should. And he said, well, why don't you come play him? I was like, oh my God, that's really cool. Yeah, sure, why not? So I did that, and I went and played him. And while we were there, we started talking, and I told him that I had this story, and James convinced me to write a script, and that's kind of where it started. And I started writing a script. I played Garth again in a vignette called Going Boldly in 2012. So it kind of took off from there.
Those are two Star Trek fan films that you were in that people made.
Right. So the Origins episodes, they've never released that. So Origins is an episode of Star Trek New Voyages, but it hasn't been released because it's unfinished, and it never will be released. Mm. It's a shame because there was a lot of great stuff in there. Some of the pieces have been put up online. Going Boldly is a vignette of Star Trek. Those were the two times I played them, and then it just kind of took off from there. We wrote a script. We raised money for Prelude to Axanar, which was really meant to be our proof of concept. After that came out, that's when we started raising money for Axanar for a full-length film.
So when you were on the second fan film playing Captain Garrett, I got to tell you, was it Admiral Garrett at the time?
The captain at the time.
Okay, and so that was when you were taking acting classes?
That was before, yeah. Actually, I didn't start acting classes till after that vignette. That's kind of when that was 2012, that's why I think that was June of 2012, and in August I started at the Howard Fine School, which is the Howard Fine Studios. He's one of the top acting coaches in L.A.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's Chris Pine's acting coach, Bradley Cooper, you name it.
There you go.
He's the man. Yeah, he's the man.
Yeah, I mean, even all the way over here from Texas, I know.
Yeah, we know his name. Yeah,
I know your name. I know the name. I know what you're talking about.
So that's kind of where it started.
Well, working on those fan films, Omega, the other. You got the acting bug, and you said, I want to do more of this.
Yes, I think it's fascinating, and I took classes pretty regularly from 2012 to 2014, first with Howard Fine, then with Ted Brunetti, one of the other coaches, who was James Gandolfini's acting coach. Ted is now on Broadway in Robert De Niro's play, Broadway Bound. And with Richard Hatch. I started studying again with Richard Hatch. I'd taken an acting class with Richard Hatch back in 1994.
Oh, wow, okay.
But I just wanted to take it just for my own personal edification. So I started working with Richard again, too. So, but I never really, I mean, I have no desire to be an actor as a profession. It's a lot of work, and it's really hard, and you have to... like any other career, you really have to be committed to it. Mm-hmm. And I have my other careers, and we have this movie to do. I love playing the role of Garth, but if I never do another role again, it won't kill me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure if something really cool or interesting came along, but it's kind of one of them things where it's not going to be a regular thing for you.
No, it's not. Yeah.
So you consider yourself more at this point a producer, filmmaker? That's what you're the hat that you want to continue to wear?
Yeah, absolutely. We've in addition to making Axanar, in the format we can because of our settlement with CBS.
Yeah.
We have two other amazing projects in the works that are I can't really talk about them right now, but they are definitely along the similar lines, though not fan films. They're both
There you go.
They're both fantastic projects, it kills me not to be able to tell you because one of them is just awesome, and you guys would be laughing your butts off at the idea. And there's another educational project that we're working on. Mike Borden, who is our PR director and our chief operating officer for Axon Productions, has been working on a project for a while, and it fits squarely in kind of our, you know, we're in the process of becoming a 501c3 nonprofit. So Secretary of State of California just approved us as a not-for-profit corporation. So now we got to go through the process with the IRS. So there's a mission, and our mission is educational. And so a lot of that is working with, you know, we've been developing relationships here in L.A. There's a chance we may be moving our studio back east, and we've been investigating that as well. But the idea is cool projects that help other filmmakers. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really important to us. And I've recently had calls with multiple Star Trek fan filmmakers in the Southeast. And we've been talking about, well, how do we work together? How do we help each other? How can we help you? And I think that's really cool because there's a lot of, you know, guys who are trying to find their way now through the new guidelines. And if we can help, we would love to, whether it's, you know, with studio, with sets, with whatever it is. But we'd like to continue helping people. So there you go.
Do you think that you probably did too good of a job with Prelude to Axanar? You got so much attention for it that sort of kind of like what kind of made the chaos and kind of drama that ended up happening with the lawsuit that now has been like totally gone. That's gone now. But
yeah. Right. But it is exactly the reason we got sued, is the quality.
Yeah.
Yes. We know that. I think most people who really know the situation see that as well. And I'm out here in Hollywood and it was, you know, it was the type of thing that I was introduced at parties as, oh, this is the guy that's getting sued by CBS and Paramount. And in one way, you know, it's flattering that you've made something so good that these studios had to take action, that felt they had to take action. Now, being that I'd worked with CBS for so long, we assumed, you know, in August of 2015, I met with them at the Vegas Star Trek convention. Mm-hmm. I asked to meet with them. I wrote an email to Liz Kalodner at CBS, and I said, hey, we should get together. Let's meet. I want to talk, make sure, you know, we're doing things the right way.
Now, did you have to ask your lawyer first about doing that meeting? Or you just went rogue?
I just went and did it. You know, that was the right thing to do. It was their sandbox we were playing in. And we were obviously raising more money than anyone had raised before, and doing things, you know, that we wanted to make sure that they were cool. And they told us at that meeting they wouldn't tell us what we could do, and they wouldn't tell us what we couldn't do. But they tell us when we stepped over a line. Well, being that I had had a 5-year relationship with CBS, I assumed that would be a phone call. Hey, Alec, you can't do this, or that would be, at worst, a cease and desist.
Sue me for what?
So we didn't expect a lawsuit. Hmm. You know, that was kind of like, hey, guys, you know, we reached out. We're trying to play by their rules. And then they kind of go nuclear. They would go right to DEFCON 5, you know, so.
Yeah, I heard Barrett, the second director that came in for the Vulcan scene. I agree with what Barrett said about basically what really triggered him off was because of the way it looked. That really like convinced me. It's like, you know what? It not only is it the money and copyright infringement and all that stuff, but I think what really, really triggered it, because it looked damn good. I think that's what it was that really set it off.
Yeah, and you know, we were just talking about this yesterday. Like, the one criticism we hear some people say of that scene is they like, oh, well, it looks just like the Star Wars prequels. It's all done on green screen. And my attitude is like, oh, so your problem with it is that it looks like a $100 million movie. I'll take that criticism. Yes, it was shot all on green screen. Listen, 99.99% of people who watch it don't understand the production end of making a film. Shooting on green screen is really difficult. Shooting that scene on green screen was really difficult because we shot it, and you'll notice the sun is always over their left shoulder in natural light. Yeah. So when we shot that scene, the morning we were shooting one direction, and then we took lunch break, flipped everything around, and shot the other direction because the sun was rising at one point. Instead, you have to be, and so it was, and Rob Burnett, our director, who is brilliant, did a great job. It planned all of that out, and as he was planning it out, Tobias Richter, our VFX guy, was like, well, you know, and you got to do it this way. So there's a lot of collaboration between the director and the VFX supervisor in a scene like that. And it was really, we shot it in one day. It wasn't that easy, but everyone did a spectacular job. And yeah, it looks as good as everyone says. It looks like it came right out of a Hollywood studio. And when you do something like that, that scene was shot for about $20,000. So you shoot a scene like that, people start getting worried, yeah. Right? I'm going to say, look, I'm going to say flat out, we have said, and we have always said that we weren't doing this for money. We were doing it because we wanted to make great Star Trek and show that we could make great Star Trek. And we offered it to CBS for free. We said, look, guys, take what we make and do whatever you want with it. We're not here to make money off of it, which they were a little surprised about. And sadly, didn't take us up on the offer, because I think the number one comment we hear from fans is fans saying, why didn't they just acquire you? Why, it's so good. Everyone loves it. Why didn't, you know, it doesn't look like a fan film, doesn't sound like a fan film. The acting's not like your typical fan film. It really feels like canonical Star Trek. And as I always say, I said, acquire us. I would have given it to them. You know, but, you know, in a way, you kind of understand why they said no, because, oh, what year does Star Trek Discovery happen? Just happens to happen the same year as Prelude to Axanar. Mm-hmm. Isn't it interesting that they decided to set their new Star Trek series in the year of the most successful Star Trek fan film of all time? That's
exactly what we were thinking, too.
We hit upon that on the last episode. So, you know, Christian Gossett was with us for a little bit, and we asked him that question. We hit upon that. And so, yeah, so now you bring it up. Star Trek Discovery, supposed to come out soon. Was already supposed to have been out, actually.
In January.
It keeps getting pushed back. But you hit right on it in the timeline. It hits on the same year, correct, as Prelude to Axanar. Mm-hmm. So the question is, was there another reason, not just the quality and the value, production-wise, of this Prelude to Axanar, one of the things that got their attention, but it could also have been that it hit too close to home, to Discovery?
I think it's because it looked really good. That's what I think.
Well, that, and so here's the question, what comes first, the chicken or the egg with Star Trek Discovery? Did they already have that in the works, and when they saw your film come out, did they like, wait a minute, that's too close to home, we've got to stop this? Or was it the other way around, where they're like, oh yeah, well, maybe we could cherry pick some stuff here?
I will tell you, absolutely, the timeline works in our favor. We were there first. Mm-hmm. They didn't even come up with their story until the end of 2016, after Brian Fuller had been brought on as showrunner. Mm-hmm. I will add, Brian Fuller, who we love, who is amazing.
Absolutely.
Hannibal is just absolutely brilliant stuff. He's a huge Star Trek fan. And Brian Fuller is not only a good friend of Rob Burnett, our director, but Brian Fuller is also a huge fan of Axanar.
Yeah.
Maybe he got inspiration from us. I'm never going to say that they copied us. I don't know what is in their mind. Yeah. I mean, I would be nothing but flattered if, you know, Brian was like, you know, I love what they're doing, let's go in this direction. We would be like, well, wow, that's awesome that we were able to inspire Brian Fuller and his team. I don't know if that's the case. Maybe Brian wanted to do this the whole time. And you know what? It doesn't matter, because I can't wait to see Star Trek Discovery. So I think it's going to be interesting. It's obviously a reimagining. I think my only fault with it at all, I don't care if the Klingons look the way they're showing us, and the Klingon ships look all gothic-y.
I don't like that either.
And everything looks TNG, and there's no round nacelles because their production designer said no round nacelles. I don't care. It's Star Trek. I'll watch it. I believe in the Star Trek multiverse. I don't like Star Trek Into Darkness, but I love Star Trek 2009 and Star Trek Beyond. I mean, you know, I judge Star Trek for, is it good filmmaking? Is it good TV? Is it, you know, I don't care that they reimagined it for, I love it. I saw Star Trek 2009 four times in the movie theater, which is more than any movie I've ever seen in the movie theater.
Wow.
Including, I got to go to the red carpet. You know, I saw Star Wars three times, so it shows you my love for the J.J. Trek. I love J.J. Trek. Mm-hmm. It's different, and so some people get so upset about J.J. Trek.
I'm with the prime line.
I love everything that J.J.'s done.
Me too.
Except for the casting for Khan in the second film. But everybody's had a gripe about that, I guess. But other than that, that's a small thing for compared to everything else that I thought was really good. I agree with you.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. You know, it's yeah, listen, it's Star Trek for a new generation. I mean, back in the early aughts, after Star Trek Nemesis killed off Star Trek movies, I was telling people, you know what Star Trek needs? Michael Bay. And people were like, what? I'm like, no, seriously, listen to me a sec. I said, Michael Bay has a totally different way of shooting a movie. Armageddon, Pearl Harbor, I mean, they're all like shot like music videos. But they're really interesting. I actually like those two movies especially. I'm a huge... Armageddon is my all-time guilty pleasure. I love Armageddon. But my point was, we needed to bring Star Trek into the 21st century from a filmmaking perspective. And that's what J.J. did. And now Justin Lin has carried on. They've made Star Trek relevant to a whole new generation. Now, you may not like that because that's not your Star Trek that you grew up on, whether you're like me and grew up on TOS, or if you're younger like you guys look and you grew up on Next Generation, whatever. But I believe in the Star Trek multiverse. I believe there's a lot of different Star Treks, and we all should endure them, whether they're the books or the FASA role-playing games or J.J. Trek or the original series, whatever. You know, fan films are all part of this Star Trek multiverse, mm-hmm. and we need to embrace it. And just like I'm embracing Star Trek Discovery, listen, if a memo came out from CBS that said, copy Star Trek, Prelude to Axar, copy it, we love it, they're successful, those guys know what they're doing, but we're going to sue them, I would be like, well, cool. I mean, hey, they liked what we were doing, and it was inspirational. I don't care. It's not my sandbox, it's their sandbox. So I wish they had come to me and said, Alec, we'd like you to make some changes. Because we would have made the changes. Of course we would have. Mm-hmm. But they didn't, and it turned into a 13-month litigation, which was to no one's benefit. I mean, it cost our donors a lot of money. It cost them a lot of money. We got a ridiculous amount of free legal representation. So listen, I think the one thing I'm always amazed about is, I mean, we have our own little cadre of haters, which we just chuckle about all the time. Or people who hate J.J. Trek so passionately that they have to go, you know, off on it all the time. My attitude is like, you know what, guys? None of that is Star Trek. You don't get it. That is not Star Trek. Star Trek is not about you hating on something because it's different. Have you learned nothing from Star Trek? Infinite diversity in infinite combinations. And so it's all about new, you know, Brave New Worlds is not just out there in the solar system. It's here on Earth. It's our relationships with each other. There's so many lessons we can learn from Star Trek. And it's all about brotherhood and working together for the greater good. Let's step down off the soapbox. Okay.
Well, you know, and it's springtime, so it's a good time to do some spring cleaning. Get some stuff off our chest. No, but the thing is that's sort of a Star Trek thing. That's sort of, unfortunately, sometimes it goes there. But it's also an internet thing. I mean, people on the internet in general, for whatever, can just be extremely vicious.
We've seen all the interviews, we've seen all the reports, we know what the outcome was, and we were sad. I was saddened by it. It first came out, I was really excited and I was really impressed, and all of a sudden didn't hear anything about it. And what happened? And then this comes out, I was like, oh, god damn it. So I'm glad that everything turned out okay. I really want, you know, if you can tell us what's going on now, would be really cool. But we definitely wish you the best. We want you to continue what you're doing.
Yeah.
You have the biggest set of balls that I've, you know, seen in a long time. Kind of like Captain Garrett going against the Klingons, and you cross that neutral zone. You know, some people will say you ruined it for people, and I was like, well,
somebody was going to do it. It was just him that was the game, the guy that changed
the
game.
Yeah, you changed the game, but it's like, you know, fuck it. Just go forward.
Yeah, here's the important thing to understand. We actually have an email from CBS in which they said a lot of fan films crossing the line. Why it happened was, there's this confluence of events. First of all, it's what's called the democratization of filmmaking, meaning that making high-quality films has become less and less expensive because the equipment is so cheap these days. The fact that here we are with our HD cameras. Everyone has their own HD camera in their iPhone or their Android, is the democratization of filmmaking. You combine that with crowdfunding, with Kickstarter and Indiegogo, mm-hmm. And we were just on the bleeding edge of this wave of Star Trek Renegades, Star Trek New Voyages, Star Trek Continues. I mean, you know, everyone was trying to raise more and more money, and we just did it a little more effectively than those guys. But, you know, Renegades raised $400,000 for their first movie, $400,000 for their second movie. Star Trek Continues raised, I think, $300,000 for their first, their second campaign. So Everyone was raising more money. Everyone was hiring professional Star Trek actors. Everyone was doing those things, paying their cast and crew. We didn't do anything that anyone else didn't do. We just did it a little more professionally, maybe.
Very professional.
Thank you.
How did you get George Takei involved? He helped a little bit with the indie fundraising.
George Takei jumped in on the Axanar Kickstarter in 2014.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were at $403,000, which was amazing. We were blown away.
Yeah.
We were at $3,000 with a date with literally 24 hours to go. And Uncle George posts on his Twitter and posts on Facebook about us. And literally, we raised another $250,000.
Wow.
Jeez. Oh, my.
Did he do that on his own, or did you reach out to him?
We didn't talk to him. We talked to his people. The fall of that year, I got to talk to him at the Star Trek convention in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And Adam Malin, one of the founders of Creation Conventions, set up a meeting between us. And I got to talk with him for about 5 minutes. And it was very nice. He's a lovely, lovely gentleman. And we all love George. And so, it was awesome. It was, but that was kind of the peak. You know, we were also talking, those were that was the peak of crowdfunding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now you're limited to raising $50,000 in crowdfunding, and you're limited to $250,000.
Yeah. That's right.
So it's all these guidelines that CBS have. And you know, there are people who blame us for the guidelines. Now, the guidelines were coming with or without us. They were coming, despite the fact that CBS didn't want to do them. At some point, they had to, and I had been asking them to for four or five years. I had been asking CBS, please come out with guidelines. Please help us by letting us know what you're cool with. And I had been talking up the chain of the command from John Van Sitters to Liz Kladner and all. And so it's good that they did come out with guidelines, but they didn't have to come out with these guidelines. I mean, they didn't have to limit you to 15 minutes. They didn't, you know, there were things, listen, those are what they chose to do. I had tried to get all the fan films together to lobby CBS on the guidelines, and, you know, unfortunately that didn't work out, and, you know, everyone went their own way. It was too bad, but when the guidelines did come out, they are what they are, and you know what? There's been some pretty good Star Trek fan films. There's been a ton of them since the guidelines came out.
Yeah, there's one in England that did with a love story. I saw that one. It was pretty good. How many days did it take to film Prelude?
Prelude was shot in 2 days. 3 days.
Wow.
We had some pickups we shot as well. The director missed some shots, and so we had to do an extra half day. So 2.5. It was basically, one day was like Tony Todd. Well, there were 6 people in there. It was 3 one day, 3 the next. I think Richard and myself, Kate Vernon maybe went in one day. I don't remember, actually. But yeah, we split it into 2, and we shot it in 2 days. And when we make Axanar, now we're making 2 15-minute episodes of Axanar, which Prelude to Axanar was, if you pay attention, it's episode 3 of the 4 Years War documentary, right? So we will shoot episodes 4 and 5, which will each be 15 minutes. It'll be in that same format. It'll be, you know, the documentary format. We're pretty excited because we get to tell the story about the battle and the peace conference. We have some exciting things coming.
Do you have to recast these roles because of the guidelines where you can't use the union actors?
No, we actually get to use our actors for these 2 episodes.
Oh, that's great.
That's great news.
That's great news.
Yeah. Is this the first we've heard this? Or?
Sadly, we can't use Richard Hatch.
Right.
Since he passed. Right.
And
people ask us, are you going to recast Richard? And the answer is no, we're not going to recast Richard. We will address that in-universe, we will address that Karn the Undying has passed. And he may have been assassinated. We're not sure how we're going to deal with it, but that's kind of...
So basically you're doing episode 4 and 5, 15-15. Are you going to do more 1 and 2 later?
Technically we can, because of the guidelines. someone else couldn't, but we can't. We'll see.
So you said it doesn't mean somebody else couldn't. Has there been somebody that's approached you about the idea of maybe them taking on the... No, okay.
Ah, there you go. There you go.
Don't get we couldn't be involved in that.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, technically you couldn't. Say me and Reed wanted to continue it. Okay, this is just a hypothetical. We're not in any way having any talks about this. But say me and Reed wanted to do it. And we wanted to, you know, needed a little advice. Could we even call you, or would that even be against the guidelines? If we needed
I don't know. That might be against the guidelines. We'd have to talk to our attorneys about
I guess we'd have to talk to the attorneys about
Our attorneys about everything like this.
Are you guys started filming yet?
No, so here's the process. So we're working on the script now, but we're also moving our studio now. Unfortunately, the biggest negative impact to Axanar and to the donors was that if you go back to where we were about 30 days out from principal photography of the first third of Axanar. We knew exactly what we were going to be able to when the lawsuit hit. And we were going to shoot the first third, which is kind of what we said we were going to do in the Indiegogo campaign, release it, and then use that to raise the money for the rest of the film. Because we're going to need another, you know, probably $500,000-$600,000 to finish the film. So when the lawsuit hit, that all got blown up. Mm-hmm. And we've been paying rent on this expensive studio that we should have, you know, we should have been paying with additional crowdfunding campaigns and then renting it out, whatever the case may be. So all of that got screwed up because of the lawsuit. So the money that we had to film the first third went to paying for the studio. So now we're looking at saying, okay, well, look, we just can't afford to keep this studio anymore. It's a shame, but because of the lawsuit, the way things have come out. So we're in a good situation in that our landlord is going to be taking over the studio. We still get to use it, which is awesome. And some of the productions we're working with are going to get to use it. So, but we're off the hook for the $12,500 a month that studio costs. And we're looking for another location. We haven't made any announcements yet, so I really don't want to get into it. But we're going to be moving to another facility in another part of the country, probably.
Oh, wow.
Which is significantly less expensive. There's a lot of big news. I can't reveal any of it now. I'll have to come back on at another time. But it's all really good stuff. It also ties into other fan films that we're talking about working with. And the studio has been kind of dominating our time for the past couple months.
Yeah.
And so we're working through the script right now because we now got to take our 90-minute, two-hour script and pare it down and rewrite it. Mm. It's rewriting it from scratch. So we're in process on that. Once we have that, we'll be able to budget it. And once we budget it, we'll be able to then raise the money for it.
As fans... Can we still buy the coffee?
Yeah, can we still buy the coffee?
Can we still get the extra coffee? Because I'd like some just for a souvenir.
The coffee was never us. People are like, oh, you guys made coffee. Well, first of all, you got to understand, there were no Star Trek marks on that coffee, right? Mm-hmm. It was Axanar coffee. It was not Star Trek coffee. There wasn't the Enterprise on it. There wasn't the Chevron on it. You know, we fastidiously made sure that there was nothing that Star Trek, that CBS could claim. Second of all, it wasn't us who made it. It was a guy who owns a chain of coffee shops in the Midwest who's a huge Axanar fan. I can't give you a license or anything. We definitely made him change his artwork. He would send us artwork, and we said, you can't do that. You can't do that. And he would change it. And we asked him at the time to take the coffee down just to make things easier. We didn't want, you don't want more problems. We just get a kick out of it because, you know, some of the haters are all like, coffee, you guys make coffee. Yes. The problem is I'm a lawyer and none of these fans are lawyers and they're all throwing what they think is copyright. And they're like, you did this. And you did. I was like, first of all, Star Trek marks are trademark, not copyright. And we were not sued for trademark infringement. Let's understand that.
Yeah.
Right. They didn't sue us and saying you can't use the Chevron. Mm-hmm. They didn't do that. They sued us for copyright infringement. Two totally different things. We went through the process. But during that process, you try and do things that are going to make the situation less inflammatory. And so we asked the guy who was doing the coffee, he said, look, can you just not sell your coffee? Because one less thing. But we love it. We joke about it because, you know, this small group of haters just latched onto the coffee as like, oh, they are selling coffee. So what? One, we're not selling coffee. That guy is. Two, it has no Star Trek marks on it. What's your problem? So it got to be a flashpoint, a kind of ridiculous flashpoint that we he sent us a bunch of it, and we'll give it out to people. So if you want a bag of coffee, I'll send you guys a bag of coffee.
Oh, yes, we want to. Yes.
That sounds
Throw in your logo, too, if you can.
Just for us.
We can wear them.
I'll sign for you. How's that?
Oh, yes. Man. Oh, thank you. Thank you, sir, so much. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what's coming ahead. Obviously, the Axanar continuation. That's
what I was looking for, because I constantly was searching to see if there's any news on the warehouse. Now we know. Any news on where the episodes are at? Now we know. So those are the questions that I was curious as a fan.
Yeah, and the best way to stay on top of what's happening with Axanar is our website, axanarproductions.com. Because I write my captain's log, like what's happening. You know, we post blogs. Donors can find out what's happening as far as like perk fulfillment. That's the place to get all the information. We also have a fan group on Facebook page. But really, the best place to go is our website to get all the information. We really try and keep that thing updated as best as possible. You guys are welcome to message me on Facebook and ask me questions. Yeah, so we're, you know, slowly working and getting the band back together.
Yeah, good, that's great.
Good to hear.
Now, I don't want to get into like personal behind the scenes. I've worked on films myself. I've had productions. I had a project years ago. It's called Captain Badass. It was a superhero parody web series. It was actually kind of in the very infancy of YouTube. We were making YouTube videos, and we had a viral profile on MySpace where we had several thousand followers for Captain Badass. Then there was something that came out later called Kick-Ass that had some very interesting similarities to Badass.
They stole your idea.
It could be quinky-dink, but ideas sometimes do travel universally. So, but we were out there. Like, the ideas were out there on the interweb. So I learned some lessons there, kind of like yourself, you know, about putting stuff out on the internet and distribution. But I know from my experience, drama happens sometimes on the set. You've got a person you collaborate with and you have good chemistry with and you're coming up with great ideas, but then you hit a wall with your relationship. It's just like in your love life. You can have great chemistry with someone for many years, be in a relationship with them, and then you go, things happen. People sometimes go their separate ways. You were working with Christian. I know you all were really good friends. You had a really good working relationship. Do you miss him? Do you miss working with him? I know that you guys aren't working together anymore. He's no longer involved in Axanar. He's off doing other things now. But do you miss that, some of that, when the things were kind of good between the two of you?
Yeah, you know, listen, there's an unwritten rule in Hollywood that when you leave a production, you don't talk about it, right? It's professionalism. As the producer, I mean, Christian has lobbed a lot of accusations our way. There's a lot of stuff that happened, there's no benefit to us talking about it. I could, you know, go on forever about my side of the story, which everyone who stayed on Axanar, which was every creative person outside of Christian, is still working on Axanar that worked on Prelude. Mm-hmm. Outside of Christian and the makeup team, we changed up. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense to you know, air dirty laundry and talk about those things. It's just not professional. And so we choose not to. We wish Christian the best, just like we said when he quit, he quit by posting on Facebook and instead of telling us. And we replied with, we wish Christian the best. And, you know, he's a very talented artist. And I was a big fan of the Red Star. And we wish him luck.
You know, all the ugliness is over now. Everyone's going their separate ways.
Yeah.
Things get better. I'm really happy to see that you guys are going to move forward. I want to see what you guys are going to do after Axanar. I want to see what you guys are going to do.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
Some projects, it sounds like, are coming up.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, listen, I you know, Rob Burnett, he always says it's all about the work. The work speaks for itself. There is no production in Hollywood where there isn't drama.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
You hear about it and whatever. I'm not interested in creating drama. I'm not interested in perpetuating it. I'm interested in making great Star Trek and then making other great projects.
Yeah.
And so what you do is, you know, sometimes it takes a project to find out who you can work with and who you can't. There's a reason that Steven Spielberg works with the same people for the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. Or Bryan Singer works with, you know, he's always got John Ottman as his editor and his music guy, and he's got the same guys, right? Because and sometimes that takes having guys that don't work out.
Tim Burton, he always uses Johnny Depp. He used to always use Michael Keaton.
Exactly. You learn, and hopefully, you know, you learn lessons. You learn yourself. I mean, heck, I'm so much better at this gig now than I was 2-3 years ago. I've screwed up plenty. I got news for you. The way that I screwed up are not the ways that anyone, you know, the things that I point to that I know I screwed up aren't the things, you know, outsiders say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're internal things that I hope I'm smart enough to look at have a little self-awareness about the things I've done wrong and the things I could do better. And, you know, I'll give you an example. After Prelude to Axanar, I went out and got John Iacovelli, the production designer for Babylon 5, Emmy winner, to work on Axanar. Now, I didn't know that Christian had promised the production designer for Prelude, the art director for Prelude, that he could be production designer. I didn't authorize that. I didn't know about it. So all of a sudden, that became an issue. I sat down with Scott. He's a super nice guy. And I said, look, dude, I didn't know this happened. My bad. I mean, I made it up to him and his crew. And I said, come and work with us. I said, I've already got John on board, so you can't be production designer, but we need help. You can be art director. You can do this. And let's stay in touch so we can work together in the future. So I avoided the drama. My mistake, I was a lot more cognizant of, wow, maybe there are other people who worked on Prelude who were promised to work on Axanar, and I need to deal with that and be careful. And, you know, so that was a lesson learned, and I learned that lesson with our DP as well. You know, I was looking for another DP. I didn't know he wanted to be the DP in Axanar. And fortunately, things worked out. Rob really liked him, and when Rob took over as director, he brought him back, Milton, who we never got rid of. He was always working with us, just not as DP. So Milton, who was our DP in Prelude, came back to be DP on Axanar. And you know what? My bad. I never should have in any way – I should have gone to him first and said, do you want to be the DP on Axanar? And given him the first shot, which I didn't, my bad. Mistakes I won't make again in the future. You know, those are things that I just wasn't cognizant of. So you learn, and if you're good and you're willing to evaluate your own performance and accept constructive criticism, you learn and you get better, and hopefully I'm significantly better than I was 2 years ago or 3 years ago or even last year.
I believe you are. Well, we live and learn. Mm-hmm. I got one more thing. That picture back over there, is that a sexy Batwoman picture? I like that.
That is Mark Teixeira. Let's see. Can I get it? All right, there we go.
Oh, yeah, it is Batgirl.
Yes.
Yep. Batgirl and Black Canary, I got that from Mark Teixeira, I think at Wizard World Arlington, 2003.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really awesome, it's a beautiful watercolor. Teixeira's awesome. And we got a couple others around here.
Get a little tour, yeah.
Here's, this is She, if you know She.
Yeah.
From Billy Tucci. He's one of my favorites. Wow. And then let's see, what other great art do we have here? Here's my personal holy grail.
Oh, wow.
Is that what you guys...
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know that one. Yes. Oh, I can't remember the name of that movie. I've seen it.
Running.
Yeah, they had forest. And they
what
had
is
the,
it?
The, silent, for Silent Running, and they had to jettison the forest and the space. It's like, no! Yeah.
That's actually the original poster artwork from 1969, 1970, whenever that movie came out.
I remember when they used amputees for the robots. Wow. That was impressive, and I was like, "Whoa!"
Yeah, if you get the Blu-ray, mm-hmm. it's one of the very first making of documentaries. The making of Silent Running is on there, and it's one of the very first making ofs that was done, and it's really good. And you should check it. And yeah, it's a great movie. It's a little. You know, nowadays, again, it's 50 years old, so it's a little dated, but it's amazing how well it holds up. Bruce Dern is the lead. Ron Rifkin, who you won't recognize because he's so young in this. Cliff Potts, who is also an admiral in Star Trek. And the robots, which were, you know, George Lucas
admitted that R2-D2.
It was based on the drones in Silent Running.
Yeah,
it's a really good movie, and it was Douglas Trumbull's directorial debut.
They used a carrier for that, didn't they? Aircraft carrier.
Oh, they shot on the Valley Forge down in it was in Long Beach, I think, here in L.A. So yeah, so the Silent Run is a great one. Well, I'm a multi geek. I'm a gamer geek, comic geek, I'm a sci-fi geek. I like it all.
We could talk that language here.
We could, yeah, we definitely talk that language.
Well, if you, next time you get through Austin, dial us up. We can get together. We can tell you where the greatest barbecue places are in town. There's a new one opening every week. We can go have some barbecue or breakfast taco or something and talk talk all fun geek stuff.
Sounds good, guys. Sounds good. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Captain Garrett, it was a pleasure to meet you, a.k.a. Alec Peters. Man. I was kind of afraid that he didn't want to talk to us.
Well, and I thought maybe he'd be he'd listen to the interview with Christian Gus.
Yeah, we're kind of worried about
that.
Even
the fact that we interviewed Christian before we interviewed him.
Yeah,
that maybe he felt like that we leapfrogged over him.
Yeah, because
when it comes to Axanar.
Yeah, how did that happen? That you got to the director before him?
Well, I mean, it was who I got a hold of first. We were trying to plan that episode. So last episode, of course, we did our Prelude to Axanar show. We were trying to get Alec Peters on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I couldn't get a hold of him, and it was like a 48-hour window. We were going to record the show, so I was able to get a hold. Peters got a hold of me.
You know what? Actually, that was probably during the time he was in Victoria. You probably got him because he was in Victoria just a couple days before.
What's funny is he probably flew into Austin. I think they drove down. He's probably right here.
He's probably in this area.
Could have had him in the studio. Maybe. Literally, if we'd known him at that time, we might have been able to invite him in. Well, next time. I'll email him and say, next time he's in Austin, we'd love to have him on the show.
Well, I'm glad to hear. That's what I was really curious about was, where is Axanar now?
Yeah.
And it seems like they had to basically start over. And I knew that the whole warehouse thing was a bad idea. They talked about that before. And they were spending $15,000, $12,000 a month on that.
Cool. I want to hit on one thing, getting back to our show for this episode that we're talking about Exodar.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about some of the comments people had written on their...
You're talking about Starship Exodar.
Getting back to Starship Exodar, there's some of the comments. Looks great, but atrocious acting. That was one of the... Jasper Rockley wrote, poor acting, but then someone commented back, I'd say the acting was pretty good for non-professionals.
Yes. Okay. Yes, that's true. That's true.
Yeah. Now, this movie had an extremely great job with their execution in terms of
everything.
Building the sets.
Everything was fucking excellent except for the acting.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing.
I tell you what the captain said?
Which captain?
James, the guy who plays the
captain. Oh, that worked on the, yeah.
He said, yeah, I know my acting was terrible.
Did he say this after we talked about how they had ten years later they had a premiere. Is that where he said that?
That's where he says, I understand. I could have been done better.
It's probably, because there's a lot of things you can see later
that
you don't see at the time because you're looking through
Even I knew when I was there, it's like, God, this guy's horrible.
But you were able to be more objective because it wasn't your production.
Right.
You're looking from the outside, kind of looking in.
Yeah.
And you're able to
say, this guy needs some acting classes.
So even while you were at extra, while on the set, you could kind of tell.
I should be the captain.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, okay, and I'm sitting here and
kick
these guys while they're
I'm not gonna kick them while they're in hiding.
But I think there's two things that when you make a Star Trek fan film, there's two different reasons why you do it. I believe this is what I gathered today while I was doing my research.
Alien ass.
Well, that's a third reason. No, but one is either you're a really big fan you want to dress up and you, as an adult, you want to dress up and you want to play Star Trek.
Fantasy.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Fantasy. Two, it's because you want to become a filmmaker and you are a Star Trek film, Star Trek fan. But you are also a filmmaker or an actor filmmaker and you want to make movies.
Yeah.
As a profession.
But you can see who you're going up against, and you can just try to, you know what I'm saying? You know where the markers are at.
Well, in the case of Axanar, I believe that they were aspiring. They want to be filmmakers.
Yep.
Peters and their fans.
Yes, Alec Peters' acting was actually good.
Yeah,
his acting was
he'd
good.
Been training. He'd been taking acting classes. He'd That's what studied with Richard.
The
Hatch.
Johnson King captain should have done.
Well, he should have. But then in his case. Did he do any more acting after? Did he do any more movie making after?
I don't think so.
After Exodar?
No, Axanar. No, I mean after Starship Exodar.
We're getting the names.
I'm getting confused. Yeah.
After Exodar, he didn't do any more films, did he?
Alec Peters?
No, we're talking about
Johnson. No, I don't think he did. I'm getting confused.
Yeah, Johnson. He didn't even. So no. I look at him as being, and I look at that group. Were those people just friends of his that he cast in those lead
That's
roles?
What I couldn't understand because I got the impression.
Did he go out and get actors, or are they friends?
They were the same people on the first episode he did before that, and they seemed to be from like different parts of the country.
Okay.
They weren't originally from here in Texas. They were from other parts of the country. They came.
Were they
in
a
Texas.
Bunch of Star Trek fans? That he, I have, got, that I don't he know found what they're, through Star
that
Trek
That I don't know. I don't know. I don't know their background.
Well, the impression I get, and you can talk about the acting, but the impression I get is they were Star Trek fans that wanted to dress up and play Star Trek more than them being filmmakers.
See, I don't know the connection to all those people. They're probably all coworkers and shit. Friends from high school, whatever.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
Well, that makes me even think even more. It's like, I want to play Star Trek with my friends.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
You know? So, but in the case of... You go to Axanar, a movie made much later on, real serious filmmakers start getting involved in making Star Trek fan films.
You can't compete against that.
And these are guys that are actual filmmakers.
Yeah.
And even now, Alec Peters is working with some pretty heavy hitters that have joined his production. They're still filmmakers. Yeah. They have a soundstage. They have a studio. They're making movies.
Well, yeah, not
they
anymore.
They are filmmakers.
See, that's where...
They're planning on moving. They're going to get into the studio, it sounds
See,
like.
See, that's what sucks, because I think ever since the lawsuit happened, and then its settlement, that 13 months that they were basically out of commission, I think it was even in that time period of 13 months, they were paying rent on a non-used warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And they were wasting money.
Yeah.
So that's what everyone kept giving them shit about, because you wasted all this money on the studio. You could have rented a studio somewhere and already done the film already before the lawsuit ever came around.
Yeah.
So it was just bad judgment on his side, and I think he's kind of admitted to some of the things, but you live and learn, and he's moving on. And yeah, some people are going to get pissed off or mad because they're not going to get what they wanted. But oh well, shit happens. And that's why, as I said, now he's going to move on after he's done with these two episodes. Mm-hmm. He's going to go do other things.
I'm sending him our address for the coffee. I'm not going to... We're going to
get that coffee. I want that coffee.
Yeah, and thank you for offering. That was nice of him to do that. Yeah, cool. All right, signed one. We won't even be able to drink it now.
You've seen the patches, right? The Axanar patches?
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, those are pretty cool. So there it is. We had Alec Peters, a surprise guest, and we had Exitar Star Trek as our second choice for... our favorite Star Trek fan films, and that was my submission. But here's my point I want to make. I think there's two reasons you make a Star Trek fan film. You either are a big fan and you want to play Star Trek. You want to dress up, you want to play Star Trek. Or you're a serious filmmaker, and you're probably also a Star Trek fan, and you want to make serious movies. And this is a springboard for you to get notoriety and get noticed as a filmmaker.
Yep.
Knowing that you're playing a movie under a brand that people are going to recognize, and it's going to get attention. Okay, so that's great. You have that, but I think that the people that just make it for fun, they may not be great actors, so the acting may not be so good, but they want to dress up and they want to play.
But after a while, you get past.
There's nothing wrong with that, though.
No, nothing wrong with
that. That is, if it's you're making the movie, it's your money.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want.
You can do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, they did, for as far as movie making is gone, they've already the Star Trek Exitar people or the Starship Exitar people have already done like 20 times bigger, 100 times bigger than anything that I've ever imagined doing myself.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
From a filmmaking standpoint, they've already surpassed it in that one film.
You know, the actual lizard alien, they kept that under secret as long as they could. They didn't want to even show what it looked like.
Wow. So, yeah. Giving them major kudos. I'm giving them more props than I am.
That was pretty awesome. That wasn't CGI. Visually, they exceeded the
series. Now, I think if they had the thing that was really a shame though is the best actor in that movie, the best actors in that movie were background talent.
Mm-hmm.
You had Dan Murphy, our friend.
Yeah, I know that's what I'm saying.
Security officer.
The better actor.
Extremely talented.
Me, laying down.
And we had you. Yeah,
see how talented that was?
That's what I'm saying. We had you.
See how talented I was?
You did a real good job playing dead. you were like, seriously.
Very deadpan.
Great performance. Now, I noticed in the credits, you had your name, your old name, like before you changed to your...
Yeah, they got my name wrong.
They got your name wrong. Yeah. They had your name flipped. That's why I couldn't find you in the credits at first.
So where's Reed Charles?
I was like, where's he at?
Charles
like,
Reed, who the fuck is that?
They flipped his name.
The fuck are these?
It was Charles Reed.
What the fuck are those?
But Reed's there. If you haven't seen it, go look for it on YouTube, Starship Exitar.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, if you haven't seen it, go look for Prelude to Axanar.
Both of them good.
These are both great, and they made it as our two choices for Star Trek fan films during this two-parter. Oh, and here's something really interesting. People might be wondering what happened to those wonderful sets. The Exeter Starship Bridge still exists. It was restored and expanded as a feature of Starbase Studios, and it's in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Lucky Dogs. It's at a warehouse there in Oklahoma City. So anybody that wants to shoot a Star Trek fan film that's willing to travel to Oklahoma City can use the actual set from Exeter.
Thunderpop, in association with D's Nuts Productions. Got 'em.
Before we do anything else, we got to do this. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. It's time for...
I'm full, man.
It's going down.
I had my coffee.
Get ready.
Feed the reed.
Do you know what bronies are?
Oh, yeah. I know what bronies are.
So bronies
I've been accused of being a brony, but I am not a brony, sir. No, sir. Not.
So bronies... Disturbing. For people that have been hiding in a cave, bronies are grown men, adult men, not kids, who are huge fans, fanatics.
No, they have sexual arousal for cartoons.
For My Little Pony.
I used to have a toy pony when I was 5. Maybe you did too. Maybe your daughters have some of these now. Over 2 decades, there have been several My Little Pony movies and TV shows. Up until 2010, the main fan base was little girls, but not anymore.
It is a little weird and a little strange, but weird and strange doesn't necessarily have to mean bad.
Brian Waller is one of thousands of adults around the world who watch My Little Pony Friendship is Magic. He's also part of a Mid-South fan group with hundreds of members on its Facebook page.
It really, really grew, you know, in 60, 80, you know, reached when it reached 100, I posted a thing that said, would anybody be interested in actually having a face-to-face meetup?
At their monthly meetups, they watch the latest episodes and share drawings and plushies they made themselves.
Here's the feed the read.
Feed the read.
Do you think that there's been some people now who have made the accusation and even gone as far? Here's a picture of one of the bronies here.
I'm not looking at that.
Okay, so there are some people that have made accusations that bronies is just a front for old perverts, so they can prey on unassuming young girls.
People are going to die, I'll tell you that right now. If they're pulling that kind of shit, they're...
Do you think it's a front, so they could get in... To get in
that, I don't want...
Because there's been the accusations that have been made.
No, this when I hear this kind of shit, it really starts to really fucking bother me. I don't want to... Yeah, I don't want.
I mean, is this Dateline kind of stuff?
Yeah.
I made some cookies! Hello. On the table.
He's Michael Willis, screen name Generic White Male. He's almost 50 years old, and he's been chatting online with a girl who calls herself Jolanda, and who says she's 15.
Hungry? How does it taste?
Great. Wow. These are home-baked.
Do you want time to finish your cookie, or?
Not really.
Okay, so you're good. If I ask you a couple questions?
Just on my way to the beach.
Yeah, if I ever caught a motherfucker doing that to females in my family, you're fucking dead.
Do you think this is across the board, or do you think that's just some of these guys, and then some of these other guys are just weirdos that like My Little Pony?
It could be that these guys are just fans of the horsies, they like horsies, whatever, and they fucking...
They like pink horsies.
They like little pink horsies, that's okay, that's fine, but they're... But to accuse them of something else, that's why I'm going a little too far. But to me, it's very disturbing. And like, it's funny, but it's like, if I saw one, I was like, get the fuck away from me, dude.
Like, even without it being, like, knowing that that's a fact, that they're using it as a front to get in with young
girls. I don't...
You're still like, get the fuck away from me.
Still get the fuck away from me, yeah.
Even if it's just them liking the horsies.
I like horsies too, but I'm not that into them, bro. All right, so you can do your brony thing with somewhere else.
So Kevin, he was accusing you of being a brony, and you didn't know what bronies were. So
I don't know what a brony was, and he told me that. I was like, fuck you. That
Kevin's our friend. It's always Kevin ass. That kind of introduces you to these very dark things.
Well, yeah,
dark
things, he does. And that, that's just kind of worries me sometimes.
Like, well, you should have turned it around him and say, are you a brony?
No.
How do you know about bronies?
Well, you know, like when I told you I have that secret clearance, that kind of thing. So yeah. He does, you know, crazy things like that too.
Oh, boy.
Feed the reed.
When we come back, agree or disagree.
My little pony, my little pony.
All right, we're back on this 35th episode of the Thunderpop Podcast with Ree Charles and myself, Stephen Presley. And here it is, agree or disagree. Okay, there was a...
No.
Research... Oh, Man, already.
No, I disagree with that.
Disagree with that? Okay. All right. All right, well then, fine. We're not going to do this. We're not going to do this anyway. We're not going to do
there
it.
You go.
You go ahead. Let's go. You go. Go on home. Let's shut it down. End the show. Peace, everybody. Good night. Now, here he goes. So there was a resurgence in popularity of vinyl in for music.
I saw a documentary on that.
Yeah.
Some company.
Do you own a record player?
No, I don't.
Do you own any vinyl?
No, I don't.
When you were a kid?
Yes, I did.
Did you have one of those little record players?
I had Davy Crockett.
Yeah, the little Davy, one of those?
With a little book and everything?
Oh, that's
cool. Oh, I fucking love that shit.
You didn't keep it.
No, I bet
you wish you had that shit now, don't you?
Yeah, I know. I wish I did.
Okay, so there's been a resurgence of popularity of vinyl.
Do you know those machines don't exist anymore? They make the shit.
The what?
The guy. There's a guy in the States who bought the... Had to go on a scavenger hunt throughout the country to find the machines that make the vinyl.
Wow.
And he found them, put them all in one location. I think Vice covered it. Yeah.
Wow. I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah, very
so,
good.
So, with you know, a lot of things have gone digital. Mm-hmm. A lot of movies are streaming now.
Vinyl's a shit.
But vinyl is back. Is there a chance, do you think, that we could see a similar comeback? Will we see a similar comeback for VHS at some point in time? Do you agree or disagree with that?
Disagree. Disagree.
So, do you think once DVD's gone, that's it for hard press for movies?
Well, for movie, man.
Or will we see a laser disc?
The thing about film is that I think Keanu Reeves covered this in his documentary. I forget what it was called. It was about film, you know, mm-hmm. that stuff. And the thing about film eventually deteriorates. Digital eventually deteriorates.
Yeah.
VHS tapes eventually deteriorate. DVDs, CDs, eventually it goes away.
Yeah.
Now, there is technology about this crystal they're trying to put data into that can last for thousands of years.
Really?
But that stuff is still, I think, still being researched. I forget what, I heard it one time on NPR or somewhere, but it was a crystal.
Like a Kyber crystal?
Man, I don't know if they think it's a Kyber crystal.
The Kyber crystal is pretty powerful. Everybody wants
but
a Kyber crystal.
But this particular crystal could actually store data.
You would love a Kyber crystal, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think so.
You'd make a light. What color would you make your lightsaber?
Red.
You do red? Oh, man.
But you didn't even finish the question.
He's
red.
Dark side. You know Samuel L. Jackson when they were making the prequels? No, he asked. I want a
purple. Oh, he wanted purple.
He wanted purple. And George Lucas said, no, they're usually blue or they're red.
So he bitch slapped him. Okay, you can have the purple one.
Yeah, it's motherfucking purple lightsabers on a plane.
It's the one that says bad motherfucker on it.
On a plane. All right, number two. During the tail end, and this is kind of in an area that you do a lot of studying in.
Tail ends?
Yeah, tail ends. Do a lot of studying.
I study a lot of tail ends, yeah.
During the tail end of the Cold War, we witnessed an explosion in World War III films. The films that were fiction.
Day After?
Yeah, Day After.
That scared the shit out of my mom.
Yeah, there was this TV miniseries about like we went to World War III. So there was an explosion in that. No pun intended, of course, about saying explosion. But are we about to see a resurgence in fiction World War III films because of all the stuff that's going on in Syria and the stuff with North Korea? Will we see Hollywood all of a sudden have a resurgence in making these type of movies? World War III fiction.
Oh, man. I think, yeah. I agree with that.
Are we going to have World War III in real life?
I fucking hope not, because I'm not done with my research yet.
Because you haven't what?
I'm not done with my research yet, no.
Do you?
I got to put my information in that data crystal.
Where did I find out about this data crystal?
Basically, look for something that has data storage mm-hmm. crystals, and you might be able to find it.
Mm.
But that was actually one idea that I'm thinking of trying to do, was to put data in a crystal.
Wow. All right.
Like kind of like Superman.
So you agree with this?
Oh, man. I think, yeah. Yes, I agree with
that. You agree with that? Okay, number three. 2017 will be the first year that Apple computers will not make the number one listing for consumer best laptop. Okay. Oh. Now, this is the first time this has happened in, I think, almost 10 years. So, you know, there's been some people on the internet have been saying that Apple, there's been kind of some little bit of whisper here and there that Apple has been slipping off, in some people's opinion.
How many times you got to reinvent the wheel?
So, but this is the question. Was Steve Jobs passing the reason why there's been kind of a slip-off at Apple, whether it's been just in people's opinion or whether there's actual factual slip-off? Now, I'll tell you, I'm an Apple guy. I've got an iPhone. I've got an Apple. I have two laptops that are Apple.
I like Macs.
We have an Apple TV. I do all my editing for the podcast on an Apple. I love Apple. I do my DJing on an Apple computer.
I got a 10-year-old fucking Apple computer in my house.
I've seen it, and you do all your editing, don't you?
No, I'm doing the editing.
you don't.
So do I do my research.
You do your research on it.
Still a good computer.
You've always liked Apple.
Yeah. But
do you think that Steve Jobs' passing, though, kind of was...
I think it is, yeah.
Him being not being around anymore is really a big impact?
Yeah, he was such a dickhead, yeah.
So you agree with that?
Oh, I agree with that, yeah.
Do you think Tim Cook, maybe he's not cutting it?
I think so, yeah.
I mean, of course, it's speculation, but he's been the head of Apple since Steve Jobs passed away. He took over.
So if it's obviously declined, then it's because of, yeah, it's not Steve Jobs, it's him.
You know, have you seen any of Steve Jobs' movies they've made?
No.
Biopics?
I don't care to.
Yeah, he's not a subject that you're that interested in.
No, not really.
Yeah, but you admire him and what he accomplished.
How much of an ass he was. Yeah, I admire that.
He was a tyrant, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
He was, and he didn't give a shit about his family. He was a madman. He was obsessed.
Yeah, he's a madman, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Bill Gates, too, right? Madman, mm-hmm. obsessed. But does it take that type of person
to be
able to do what they did, to create they created?
No, I think they've proven that, too. Like, the higher of a status a person has in society, the more psychotic they are. You know, like, the more, you know what I'm saying?
So the higher up you are...
The more cutthroat, the more... things you're going to do to make it happen.
Like, so the people like Oprah Winfrey, the president, Donald Trump, Ted Turner, these people that are like the big top.
Yeah, they're very, you know, they will, to a certain degree, they will do, you know, destroy people or push people out of the way and like survival of the fittest kind of thing.
You know, we were talking about, I was talking with my trainer at the gym about Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh.
And we were talking about Lou Ferrigno, and then Lou Ferrigno went to Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I'd seen the documentary Pumping Iron. And
Schwarzenegger's a fucking dick.
If you were someone kind of coming up and that you were wanting, you needed help, he was very nurturing. Mm-hmm. But once you're his competitor,
you're the enemy.
You're the enemy. Right. And man, he'd do everything he can
do. He got in his head, too.
To get in your head.
And it was fucking awesome.
And he would do psychological warfare to get in your head. He was an extreme competitor.
Yeah.
So
that's what you got to do, And there's nothing wrong with it. That's just the way life is.
Hasta la vista.
Bronies.
Hasta la vista.
Bronies.
Hasta la vista.
Bronies.
There it is, with agree or disagree. All right, we have a closeout.
I'm still bothered by the brony shit.
Man. You're still disturbed by the brony stuff.
Disturbed by that shit. That's fucking disturbing.
We're going to close it out with thoughts and advice for your day.
My Little Pony is... a surprisingly epic experience.
This one goes out to all of our brony brothers. And this one goes out to all of you Pegasus sisters. We know that friendship is magic.
Wait. I'm sorry, did I fall asleep?
I think you fell asleep. I think it was the music that put you to sleep.
Bronies. Bronies. Bronies.
All right, there it is. There's a closeout of the show. I want to thank Mr. Reed Charles. Also, we want to thank Alec Peters.
That was really cool to have him on. Yeah.
Captain Garrett flew in just in time to save the day and was our special guest on the show. Since the XNR people are on a witness protection program now, one of them is going to email me like 10 days from now. I'll be like,
if they hear about it,
they finally...
No, we're alive!
Finally see the message.
Yeah.
All right. Well, everyone have a great whatever it is. Have a great one. Peace.
Peace out, bitches.
Thunder Pop. It's time for Thunder Pop. Don't make me say it again. Thunder Pop. Thunder Pop. Thunder Pop. I will not say it again.
Okay, I lied.
Thunderpop! 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 Oh, Thunderpop!
So long! See you later! Beat it! Hit the bricks! Hit the bricks!
And Thunderpop is a Hit the Bricks production.